Hi, and thanks for clicking on to this presentation on understanding race, culture, and anti-discrimination competence framework. My name is Mahmoud Ahmad, and I'm very, very genuinely excited to do this presentation with Counseling Tutor on this subject, a practical approach to help you position and assess your self-development in race and culture. So I've got a question for you as you're listening to this. When we say race and culture, what's the first thing that comes up in your mind? Perhaps spend a few seconds thinking about that. Because when I talk about race and culture, I am talking about more about the sense of conflict, psychological strength, and deficit when we belong to certain groups in the world. And that includes everyone. Everyone belongs to groups, and everyone can have conflicts. So this competency and this self-development work is about each and every individual. And it's not just about people from the global south or different non-European cultures. We are all cultures, and so we need to develop our awareness of ourselves. That's my starting point. So just to give you a bit of background on myself, I'm a therapist. I live in Berkshire. I am a trainer in this area as well. And my specialist areas for practice are trauma. And I'm very interested in research and developments and change within professional mental health field around anti-discrimination, anti-oppressive practice, particularly when we're talking about diverse groups. So that's me. So the agenda for today is to walk you through our competency framework. What are the learning outcomes for today? What we mean by RCA, race, culture, and anti-discrimination. So I'll use RCA for short. Some of the history of competency frameworks and how this might fit into that overall, where it differentiates and where it's very similar. Why we needed this competency framework, I believe, and some of the principles and some of the content and some of the ways that competency framework has been designed. So you can actually use it in a practical way for yourself and to help you situate yourself in your self-development for it. And lastly, I'll also give you some training options we have for developing yourself and the competency around this framework too. So today I'm not going to be sharing too much about the in-depth of all the aspects of race culture. It's more about what are these competencies that we need to develop within ourselves and in the profession itself. Okay. So the overall objective of today is to understand the context, structure, and principles behind this framework, to be able to have the objectives of explaining the historical evolution of multicultural competency frameworks, and the rationale for this particular framework. We'll understand in depth more about the principles of self-development, how we need to align ourselves with this competency, what are the important high-level areas that we need to consider, and to be familiar more about the ways in which we can develop ourselves, which can be more experiential rather than necessarily educational, although both are important, and communicate then some of the training options that we have available as well. So I also wanted to put this slide in and talk a little about the anti-discrimination focus. This is something I founded about a year and a half ago. And the whole intent is to bring together practitioners, interested parties, training providers, trainers, students who are interested in embedding this type of focus into curriculum into practice, into their own practice. So we are here to help, as a network, organizations who wish to embed this work into their curriculum, into their service design and organization. So we're working with a number of training providers in the counseling and psychotherapy profession. And we have I've started off organically in terms of mentoring and in terms of getting more momentum behind this area. Okay, so the actual framework I'm going to describe at a high level can be found on the resources link. There's an email address if you want to contact us. It directs you to a mini course that we'll be developing to help you further in understanding this framework as well, and a community to discuss these areas. Okay, so let's begin more to unpick what these terms mean, and so we can situate the importance of this learning. Okay. Braces come to be used in a number of ways. One is in terms of a heritage way. You know, we are of a certain descent, whether it's Anglo-Saxon, whether it's European, whether it's ethnicity, Jewish, you know, what nationality, etc. So that's a more of a descent-wise, a known origin story around your past and your collective group past. But race is also being used as a way of inferiorizing people based on phenotype. Phenotype being primarily we're talking about skin color, but it can be the whole body structure and skull as well. And that was created obviously within a European context to create a classification system. So some of this work is about what the effects of that are psychologically based on people from the global South. The next definition is about culture. Culture we use in a very loose, generic way to mean values and norms that we adhere to as either individually, as part of a group. And sometimes those things can overlap with terms like ethnicity and the heritage, etc. But in essence, we're talking about what is the values and norms and beliefs of a particular group of people, whether it's based on a religious group or it could be based on a traditional ethnicity or value system that people might have, which could be very much evolving. The other term, anti-discrimination, we're going to be using as a way of ending any disparities in inequality between different groups of people. So for example, if there's discrimination against people of a particular nation, their ethnicity, or because of their race, we're talking about anti-discrimination recognizes that people can be treated unfairly, not just individually, but also because of being part of a group. So from a psychological therapeutic practitioner perspective, we need to develop our understanding of how to work with that. I also use this term called majority diverse group, which is effectively the collection of protective characteristics, including socioeconomic status and neurodivergence as well. This is to differentiate the idea between normative and diverse as well, and to provide some focus into that. Okay, so let's drill a bit deeper into the framework and what the overall scope and definition is. As I've said before, is that this is all inclusive. In other words, it's for everyone. It's for all your clients. It's not just for people of the Global South or particular non-European ethnicities. We need to consider it the impact psychologically on the clients, on yourself as therapists as well, the strengths that you have of identity, and the relationship you have with your own racial cultural group assignments. And that can be based on what society gives you, your birth, your location of birth, and yourself as well. So considering aspects, if you're living in Britain today, you'll be considering things like Brexit, you know, the effect of that. Another consideration could be the effect of the political arena and the changing aspects of that. And of course, it could be to do with recognizing the past historical discrimination on people of color and on the global South as well. So considering our identity, those things can be challenged to us. And our groups that we belong to, we may have conflicts. Therefore, these can be psychological and therefore part of the work that we do in therapy. But also recognizing that these are also strengths, because people's heritage, their language, where they come from, their nationality. For clients, it may be that they actually, it's a resource that is actually something that can help clients buffer their psychological life and help them in the work that you do with them. And when we're talking about groupings, we're talking about a multitude of groupings. Yeah. So we talked about heritage, cultural ethnicity, the language, what nationality they are, where's their migration story, how did that evolve? How was their journey from moving around from different locations, different countries? How has that affected them? And also then this idea that is very prevalent today in our field is considering intergenerational conflicts and the intergenerational baggage and wounds that we carry into the here and now based on our ancestors and based on this collective history. So I hope that's given you a broad scope for the consideration of race and culture in the therapeutic practice and why this is something of concern in terms of making this information available, making these competencies available. Okay, so where does anti-discrimination come into this? Well, the principal idea behind this is that if we have groups can be unfairly treated. We've seen, obviously, the Ukraine instance is an example that's very prevalent now. But also, the other aspect is racism, etc., xenophobia. So we need to consider that. But also we need to consider it within ourselves as practitioners, our own biases, our own values and beliefs, so that we can work on ourselves and recognize that disparities in the professional sense, in mental health are there. And how can we help to create an environment where we have equality of in terms of no barriers for people accessing therapeutic practice and better outcomes because we have quality and competencies available and practitioners available to work with different clients in all senses. Okay, so the next point of call is I wanted to give you a bit of a context historically for these competency frameworks as well. So you may be familiar with the idea of the therapeutic modalities having four or five different waves of therapy. We consider behavioral, psychoanalytic, humanistic, person-centered, but also multicultural competence being the fourth wave of competency, and anti-discrimination practice. So the competency framework that I'm talking about more falls into these two areas here and considers that we need to adapt our base modalities to work in this area as well. Okay. So pre-1980s, diversity was considered a more around difference. And although there were other psychologies like liberation psychologies that recognized power and oppression of groups of people in society, it wasn't certainly in the mainstream, if you like, in consideration of group level discrimination at that point, not in terms of mental health and therapeutic practice. Therefore, it was considered more normalizing, applying approaches universally to groups of people, regardless of who they were, effectively their identity, their racial cultural identity. Then towards 1980 to 1990 and 2000, that's when we had a step change in terms of considering these types of competencies. And a lot of our competencies come from, we transfer a lot of the competencies from America, who with the APA, American Psychological Association, in developing a de facto standard for competencies for multicultural competence. So in about 1994, these competencies were ratified and became mainstream. However, alongside those came various events which were outside of that, especially when we consider race and heritage. We had more and more books and theories coming around racial identity, which is how we think about ourselves in the world and our own cultural and racial identity. So there were several books written at this time around that, but they didn't become mainstream as such. They were effectively weren't integrated enough into the overarching curriculums, overarching approaches. Then around in 1998, this big term came around in cultural competency called cultural humility, which I'll talk about a bit more later on, but it became a central idea that if we treat cultures which are different to our own, we could easily other cultures because we're trying to understand it from our own lens rather than the lens of the clients. Therefore, this idea of considering empathically other people's cultures became important rather than seeing it through an objective type of lens. Then furthermore, around 2002, there was more work done on social justice in how we can work with clients for that and how what competences and skills we need to develop. And then furthermore, the idea of intersectionality has been prevalent since 2008. And this is a simple but powerful idea that people identity, if you locate different forms of people's identity, their gender, their culture, their race, their sexual identity, etc., this forms a basis for understanding the social world in which a client inhabits, because they may be facing intersections of discrimination, othering, or advantage even as well, based on that. And what is the meaning of that therapeutically? So the APA have done some guides around race and ethnicity and intersectionality. And we also have many positive practice guides around race and culture as well. But the important point to note is that we haven't had a integrated framework for all this together that is practical, that we want to give and we want to train students in, so that it becomes cohesive as well and important. The idea being that if we are considering clients, as I say, client case studies, through a very normative lens rather than a diverse, this is what the world really looks like lens, we can easily make assumptions about clients without considering race, culture, diverse identities, difference, etc. So that's the basis and the context for these types of multicultural competencies, anti-discrimination practice competencies. One thing to note also is that culture can be used in different ways. And often when we talk about culture, it can remind us of different people that are non-European perhaps, or maybe from different parts of Europe. But culture in the American sense actually means more diversity. And it's important to recognize that the multicultural competence, although there was a lot of focus on race and ethnicity, did incorporate different diverse identities like disability, yes, and gender identity and things like that. And that's important to note that these things have been in existence for a while. So here is the seminal, let's say, competency framework that was originally developed by Sue and colleagues around about 92. And these were ratified about 92 within the APA framework. And this gives you a framework to understand as a therapist on the left-hand side, what beliefs, knowledge, and skills I need to have when working with cultural competence, and how they land and how they apply in the awareness for myself, in the awareness of the clients, and in doing so, what are the intervention strategies and techniques that I need to incorporate into myself so that I can work with clients in a multicultural way. So, for example, if we look at here knowledge and we look at the strategies that we need to develop, first one, it talks about more of an understanding of how generic counseling skills may clash with cultural systems. So the purpose of this type of competency is to help you reflect on that particular topic. You know, how is it that what we've learned may clash with the valuing system? Because our therapeutic system will have a valuing system embedded in it, how it could clash with other people's systems. So it gives you a time to reflect on different ways what we know as standard perhaps may be different for different clients. Yeah. Yeah, another example here is developing skills around this competency. So another example here is able to engage in a variety of verbal and non-verbal helping responses. Okay, so here's another idea that actually we are need to consider our responses in a multitude of ways, multiple of languages as well. I think it's well worth looking this up and just reflecting on each part and saying, do I understand some of these things? Does it make sense? Well, we're going to dig deeper, just as a way of self-reflecting. And this is part of critiquing, and it's part of analysing ourselves and developing more awareness. Around 2015, this is the first time I've seen a sort of a competency framework which acknowledges the privileged position, social position between the client and the therapist as well. So not only in this competencies do we consider the counselor's own self-awareness of themselves and the skills they need to develop and their gaps. We consider the client world's view and the relationship. So how is the relationship affected based on this idea of power imbalance, and how we can understand based on identities how that could be affecting the relationship? How is it then that a therapist, maybe based on a more privileged identity in some areas or less privileged identity in some areas, how that could affect the relationship? And obviously when we come to talk about race, we can think of it in terms of archetype of black and white, but also apply that same understanding to different identities, regardless of any assumptions we can make about people. There could be identities we're not aware of, and there could be a position that affects the client in their world, but also is part of the work that needs to be brought up into therapy as well. The other area in this is that actually this is one that actually considers this idea that we are in the therapy room and that we can either have a client looking at themselves and looking at how they can cope, manage, and thrive in a structure and an environment as it is, or in some cases The main action may need to be taken outside the therapy room or by the client if they wanted to do so, to resist injustice in the world. So there are some competencies that are highlighted in this framework, well worth reading and digging into as well. Okay, so turning the attention to this framework, the RCA framework that we've developed, is that the rationale for this is the simple fact that sometimes these competencies can feel, not always, that they aren't all-inclusive. In other words, they don't apply to every single human being because we are all, as I said before, racial, cultural in some way. Yeah. Secondly, Ferrisov argues that if we treat difference as difference without considering power, without considering the socio-political histories of people and their relationships between each other, we lack that precision. We don't. It can be easy to flatten our understanding of difference rather than consider the unique aspects of a client and their different diversities. So recognizing that we want to develop something a bit more specific for that, for race and culture. And then as people are saying that, if we treat everything as difference, we may forget that there is a different socio-political history for different groups of people based on their race and culture as well. And otherwise, also consider the fact that this could be othering. If we are thinking of ourselves as normal and we're considering a client as of difference and different, we could inadvertently be othering because we haven't considered ourselves as racial, cultural as well. So purpose of these competencies is to consider how we are, what values and beliefs we hold, what group identities we belong to, and then in consideration of that, how that is with your awareness of yourself and with clients' work as well. And it also helps you to do the work that clients may need to. Okay. So specifically in terms of practical aspects of this framework, we want to consider the psychological aspects of this, and that's a reason for this competency. We recognize that for the majority diverse group, and in this case, race and people of the Global South, there are disparities in the mental health outcomes, and that is a given, and it's a huge amount, which, you know, roughly equates to 20% differential. But it also depends on what we're talking about and which groups, etc. So another reason why this is important is the disparity is a key reason why this is important. Salience of race. The avoidance of race, when I talked about phenotype, I talked about skin tone, that we need to, as practitioners, recognize that we are here to uncover unconscious material. We're here to go to places that may feel taboo, uncomfortable to us. So we need to address it face on through these competencies and say, we need to consider race in an earnest, genuine sense, in a sort of not a superficial sense, in a more deeper way. Yeah. And also recognizing that racial cultural discrimination occurs, and it could be based on religion, could be based on ethnicity as well. For example, considering Gypsy, Roma, and travelers. So we need to consider discrimination in its forms. What group discriminations have you faced is a question I would ask you as you're listening to this. And we also need to consider the systems themselves rather than focusing on individuals, thinking on the whole system, because it's complicated in terms of the factors that lead to discrimination, both in the world and in mental health as well. Okay, so how we developed this, we reviewed the frameworks, strengths and weaknesses of it. We applied it in training. We've done proper cohorts with 150 people over periods of time, about 36 hours long. We've done collaborative reviews of peers and as well. We recognize that this is based on experience as well as knowledge. So we're trying to say experiential counts. We understand the types of issues that occur in training, the types of things that come up, the types of gaps that we have. We need to incorporate that into competencies. So we're recognizing all these areas, but we're not, this competency framework isn't replacing anything. It's just a complementary one to it. It's more practical, I would say. It's more specific, I would say. It's not perfect, but it's supposed to be organic and good enough. Okay, so this is the structure of this competency framework. So we have a number of areas. As you'll read and download that, it will consider how we integrate and adapt our therapeutic practice and modalities, how we consider the racial cultural identity of our clients and ourselves, professional framework of ethical framework, and what are the overarching principles of our work so that we work ethically. An example could be, for example, ensuring our biases against and we don't inadvertently assimilate other people's cultures that are different to ours into our own. That's an example of professional framework and ethics. Relational development, dynamics of the relationship, considering the social position, what is outside the room is inside, what is outside the society could be inside the therapy room and vice versa. Considering discrimination, how we work with that, how we broach those subjects, what skills we need to develop. And of course, as people migrate, move from place to place, we need to consider how that happens over generations and intergenerational, consider intergenerational stories, trauma as well in the migration story. Okay, so there is obviously a lot of detail in the competency framework, but these are the overarching principles that are, I think, were worth just to touch upon today. Okay. So overarching principles of this kind of work, we consider that we develop an anti-discrimination ethos. In other words, we are considering social justice, our contribution to that as practitioners by developing our own competencies, working with different groups of people, working on race, racism, discrimination, etc. So developing that mindset that actually we need to be intentional, be more outgoing with our activity, for example, just to even to attract the clients that are not getting the help they need. Number two, embedded as standard. In other words, what I've talked about is all-inclusive. It doesn't matter if they're white British or not. It's part of that overall assessment. You know, what are the groups that you belong to? What identity is important to you? What are the strengths of your identity? What are they causing conflict? So having that knowledge to apply the art of therapy into the room. We consider number three, which is actually the phenotype. We consider that people of have been racialized. So we're talking about South Asian, East Asian, African, etc. That we don't ignore that. It's not that we say everything, but we don't ignore it as part of our conceptualizing of the client difficulty, depending on your modality, etc. Number four, we need to consider our own identity. The work is on ourselves, processing through who I am. You know, where are you from? What's the heritage? What's the conflict? What do you feel about yourself? And often people can say things like, I don't feel that, for example, someone might come and say, even though they're white, that they don't feel that they fit in anymore. Or they may be feeling guilty because of some of the history. So that's part of the processing that we as therapists can have to understand ourselves, uncover our biases, work on that knowledge, work through and develop that relationship with ourselves. Number five is affirming groups and strengths, which is simply as it is. We don't pathologize, we don't disbelieve, we are relative to the person's cultures. We affirm their cultures if that's what they're doing. And we don't stereotype those cultures. We don't discriminate against those cultures. We don't label all the group of people in a certain way. Yeah. Number six, responsibility for reaching clients. This idea that we can have our practice set up, our shop set up, and we consider it that actually, why are certain client groups not coming to us? But actually the responsibility needs to rest with us as a profession. And we individually can do what we can to attract clients if there are disparities of certain client groups not coming into therapy, whether it's based on their race, nationality, religion, etc. And the ongoing practice that we need to have as a principle is that we need to continue to self-develop ourselves. We need, if we're doing this work seriously, to have all therapists that are race and culture aware, ideally assessed, so that even if the therapist hasn't had the skills yet or needs help yet or still in development yet, the supervisor should be there to help them reflect on the racial cultural relationship, the content, the discrimination that the client may be facing, and whether that needs to be broached or not. And number eight, humility is the act of care, regardless of difference, to bridge those relationships, to care, to be compassionate, and recognizing not only are you not the expert of the client, but you're also not expert of their healing either and the approach to healing. So it's a slight difference to simply saying, well, I'm not the expert of a client's world. Okay, so I'm going to talk a bit about self-development and how you can consider looking at this area yourself. Just to give you a few tips, really. Okay, so when we are developing ourselves in race and culture, these are the things that are really help along the way. In my experience, because we do a lot of group work, just be open to reflect on yourself, open to learn, open to feel the discomfort, you know, because it's body-based, because a lot of the stuff when we consider ourselves and we can react and we can, we can feel things in the body because of this tension that can occur between racial groups. So therefore, we need to allow a bit of space for that, allow some words around the feeling, and whether something feels reactive in our body because someone said something. So as long as we're open and to learn, and we're open to go into that discomfort, it's a very good way of just having that centering attitude towards this development. Okay, so this one is also saying, in terms of our self-development, to consider humility. You know, we are probably familiar with vulnerability. The act of being vulnerable with your feelings, being saying appropriately to a client, for example, that you don't know, being congruent to that, you know, that feeling that you have. So these things can match up and authenticity. But also adding this dimension of humility, as I've talked about, which leads to a better relationship, which is developed via research that says that a therapist having humility, especially when they're working across cultural groups, that is a really powerful way of developing the relationship further, because we're not seeing the client just as something that we work with within our own context. We're seeing them not only in their own context, but also in their own knowledge of themselves and their culture, and not saying one way is the right way or not. So this cultural humility idea came from Tervelon and Garcia, 98. And it's one of the definitions of, is it the ability to maintain an interpersonal stance that is other-oriented, open to the other, or open to the experience of difference, and not to be in a place where our difference or our ways or our culture or is the right way. We don't know the answers. It's that sort of feeling, which is almost like, I don't know. They're going back to that basis, so I don't know the answers. It can feel comfortable in our position, but really, how much do we know? We're continuing. That's your humility, emotive place of humbleness in that sense. It's more of an attitude and value. It's not necessarily a something that is taught educationally. It's an experience. Okay, so these are some of the growth processes that you'll find in the competency framework. I won't go into every one of these, but what we wanted to do with this competency framework is we wanted to give therapists an idea of the specific practices that could help them in development of this area. So I've highlighted education. We seem to have a lot of education, a lot of books, etc., but we need to get practical as well as that. So an example of that would be power consciousness. Are we aware when we're talking to people of our identity, the potential identity of people, and the effects of that power? And that's something we can practice day to day. Another aspect of it could be a worldviews, which is actually when we have our own worldview, we might not see the whole world's worldview. So one of the practices that I recommend is that we order an understanding of, you know, stories of different cultures, political art, and things that are going on in different worlds, and develop relationships inside, so that we don't think in a sort of metaphorical black and white sense. And these are things that we can continue to work on. For example, the other idea is books. You know, if we're typically reading Eurocentric books, we can consider therapist books that are of a different culture. And so we are actually expanding, and it provides a more rich understanding of the world and the differences of valuing and systems as well. Okay. Another aspect of development could be the group talk. So considering encounters with different groups, and that's something that we do as well, is working through what's that feeling, what are the difficulties, why are these relationships difficult? Can we heal them? Can we get them better? What is it involved to do that? What happens when we make mistakes? So it's developing those relationships, having those sort of group encounters and gaining confidence and releasing any tensions within our bodies as far as we can. So that's giving you an idea of the different types of practices that you can use to develop yourself in this area. Okay, so we're coming towards the last part of this presentation. I just want to highlight some of the training options we have available. So we have a number of trainings. Our core training is the curriculum on RCA. It's available now. It's based on experiential practice as well as lessons, theory, and concepts. And we designed it specifically around this type of framework to springboard practitioners' development. We are specifically concerned that we only have short amounts of time, especially in training courses, to make an impact and to help the therapists develop a minimum baseline for this competency as soon as possible. So that training course is particularly designed on around that, to ramp that initial springboard of development to gain that first step of development foundation. We also have group work in that. We also have optional assessment. So if you're concerned about whether I have a knowledge or where am I heading the right direction, we do an assessment, which is like a panel effectively and a discussion around different areas, so we can help you along that journey as well. So our training is unlimited in terms of we want to make sure it's a sort of following a lifelong ethos. It's like you come on the workshops, you continue that, you guide yourself in terms of how much you need, rather than a fixed, you know, you come for 3 days or 3 weekends. It's up to you then to develop yourself in all these areas, but there is a minimum of 36 hours on there. We also have a number of one-day CPDs, and you can find them on our learning portal, learn.tadf.uk. And you can also subscribe to us and the events that we're doing in this area. We have an up and coming training course now, Applying Anti-Oppressive Practice in Therapy, which will be providing a more in-depth look at the mental health profession and how we can apply these principles into our therapeutic work and into our practice organizations, etc. As part of this TADF initiative, we want to help organizations and training providers further with this type of work, especially around anti-oppressive practice for majority diverse groups, so that we get a more of an embedded feel for diversity in there. So we're available to, as this network, to support training providers. We're working with a number of them already. We need more, obviously, to gain traction and further development. We also want to hear from individuals and students who are really passionate about this work. We have some students that are coming up to us, and we're working with to develop them into these areas. If they're interested, it's another area of your own practice as well, potentially, in the future and career. So these are the areas we want to work on. So if you know anyone in any training provider, ask your training provider if they might be interested in this. If you're an individual student, please get in touch as well. So that's the presentation. I hope it gave you a bit of food for thought. Any questions, feel free to email us as well, admin@tadf.co.uk. Okay. Thanks very much for listening.